This is Studio One at CBS. The Columbia Broadcasting System invites you to Studio One for the seventh in a new series of hour-length versions for listening of celebrated stories, novels, and plays. We introduce the director of Studio One, Fletcher Markle.
Our story tonight is a portrait of man in conflict, The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. Adding to the praises of many illustrious admirers, Ernest Hemingway has called it one of the finest books of our literature, and rightly so. The conflict in Mr. Crane's story is a familiar and disturbing one to all of us. Man at war. In particular, a young man named Henry Fleming in the American Civil War of 1861 to 1865. But as the successful prosecution of war requires the bright red badge of courage, so too, we are beginning to understand, does the prosecution of peace. As for our players tonight, you'll be hearing Everett Sloan as author Stephen Crane, the story's narrator, with John Sylvester as Henry Fleming. It is with a fervent hope for permanent peace in our nervous world and in admiration for the Henry Flemings of our more recent yesterdays that we trust to peace.
From Studio One, CBS presents The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane.
Morning, dawn, the cold passes reluctantly from the earth, and the retiring fogs reveal an army stretched out on the hills resting. A river lies at the army's feet, and one can see across it the red eyes of hostile campfires set in the low brows of distant hills. As the morning landscape changes from brown to green, the army awakens and begins to tremble with eagerness at the noise of rumors.
We're going to move tomorrow, sure. We're going to move.
Who said?
We're going way up the river, cut across, and come round in behind them.
Who says?
Yeah, who says, Jim?
Crump says he heard it from a cavalryman.
And where'd the cavalryman hear it?
His brother told him.
And where'd he get it?
From one of the orderlies at division headquarters.
Boltor!
It's a lie, that's all it is, a thundering lie.
I don't believe the army's ever going
to
move.
We're set here. I got ready to move 8 times in the last 2 weeks, and we ain't moved yet.
You want to make a bet?
Sure, I'll bet.
All right, bet then. It's certain true.
Hey, what's he shouting for? What's up, Jim?
The army's going to move, Henry.
We're going
to
move.
I'll pay no heed to him, Fleming. Conklin don't know what he's talking about.
How do you know we're to move, Jim?
Heard a while ago.
Don't believe him, Fleming. It's all just rumor talk.
Well, you can believe me or not just as you like. I don't care a hang.
Prove it, Conklin.
Sure, where's your proof?
I don't need to prove nothing. I'm just telling you. We're going to move tomorrow, going up the river, cut across, and come round behind them.
Thunder. It's going to be a battle at last.
Private Henry Fleming listened with eager ears to the words of his tall friend, Jim Conklin, and to the mixed comments of his comrades. Then, after a long minute, he turned slowly and went to his hut. He stretched out on his bunk to be alone with some new thoughts.
We're going to fight. Tomorrow there'll be a battle, and I'll be in it.
For a time, it was hard for Henry Fleming to make himself believe the news about the battle. You cannot accept with assurance an omen that you are about to mingle in one of these great affairs of the earth.
It ain't a dream anymore. It'll be a real battle right now.
Henry Fleming had dreamed of battles all his life. Vague and bloody conflicts that had thrilled him with their sweep and fire. But awake, he had regarded battles as crimson blotches on the pages of the past. He had put them as things of the bygone with his thoughts of heavy crowns, shining armor, and high castles. From his home on the farm, his youthful eyes had looked upon the war in his own country with distrust. It must be some sort of a play affair. But he had burned to enlist in the Union Army. Tales of great campaigns shook the land. He had read of marches, sieges, conflicts, and he had longed to see it all. One night, as he lay in bed, the winds had carried to him the clangoring of the church bell as some enthusiast pulled the rope frantically to tell the twisted news of a great battle. This voice of the people rejoicing in the night had set him sweating with excitement. Later, he had gone down to his mother's room.
Ma, you sleep?
No.
I'm going to enlist.
Henry, don't be a fool. Back to your bed now.
I am, Ma.
You're not, and that's an end to it.
I am, Ma.
You're more good here, Henry. On the farm, here, where you belong. If your father was alive, he'd tell you that. He would, Henry. I know.
Nevertheless, the next morning, Henry Fleming had gone to the town near his mother's farm and had enlisted in a company that was forming there. And later, when he had stood in the doorway with his soldier's clothes hanging stiffly on him, and with the light of expectancy in his eyes almost blinding the glow of regret for home bonds, he had seen two tears on his mother's face.
You watch out, Henry, and take good care of yourself in this here fighting business.
Yes, sir.
Don't go thinking you can lick the whole rebel army at the start, because you can't.
No.
You're just one little fellow amongst a whole lot of others. And you've got to keep quiet and do what they tell you.
Yes, sir.
I've net you 8 pair of socks, Henry, whenever they get holes in them. I want you to send them right away back to me so as I can burn them for
yes,
you.
Yes, sir.
I don't want you to ever do anything, Henry, that you'd be ashamed to let me know about.
No.
If so be a time comes when you have to be killed or do a mean thing, well, then, Henry, don't think of anything except what's right. Because there's many a woman has to bear up against such things these times. And the Lord will take care of us all. Don't forget about the socks, child. And put a cup of blackberry jam with your bundle. Because I know you like it above all things. You watch out now and be a good boy.
Henry Fleming said goodbye around the town. His schoolmates thronged about him with wonder and admiration. A certain light-haired girl had made vivacious fun at his martial spirit. But there was another and darker girl who grew sad at the sight of his blue tunic and brass buttons. Henry Fleming often thought of Jessie and the way she had looked and what she had said that last day.
You don't look like yourself, Henry.
Well, the coat's new. Stiff. It'll soften up, Jessie.
No matter how it gets, you'll never look yourself. You're no soldier, Henry. Not you.
Don't you like me to be fighting like the others? Jess?
No.
Well, somebody has to fight.
Not you, Henry.
Well, I am.
Will you write me once every while or so?
I was never one for writing, Jessie. But I'll write you.
Please. And, oh, take real care of yourself, Henry. Don't go behaving foolish. Don't go doing crazy things.
I won't.
If you have to fight, then fight, but don't go doing anything foolish just to be brave.
No.
I hope it's over soon, and you'll come home soon, and...
I will.
You'd better go, Henry.
I guess.
Take real care now.
Certain sure, Jesse.
On the way to Washington, the regiment was fed and caressed at station after station until Henry Fleming had believed that he must be a hero. There was a lavish expenditure of bread and cold meats, coffee and pickles and cheese. But after complicated journeyings with many pauses, there had come months of monotonous life in a camp. Henry Fleming had had the belief that real war was a series of death struggles with small time in between for sleep and meals. But since his regiment had come to the field, the army had done little but sit still and try to keep warm. He had grown to regard himself as part of a vast blue demonstration.
Drilled and drilled and reviewed.
And drilled and drilled and reviewed. But now there was a serious problem.
We're going into battle. Tomorrow.
Now it suddenly appeared to Henry Fleming that perhaps in a battle he might run. He might be afraid. He was forced to admit that as far as war was concerned, he knew nothing of himself. He might be afraid and run.
Oh, what's the matter with me?
He got up from his bunk and walked nervously back and forth in the little hut.
That's all right, Wilson. All you got to do is wait, and pretty soon you'll find out I was right.
Well, you don't know everything in the world, do you?
Didn't say I knew everything in the world. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Jim. Wilson.
Hello, Henry.
Going to be a battle, sure, is there, Jim?
Of course there is. You just wait until tomorrow. You'll see one of the biggest battles ever was.
Thunder?
Dad.
Well, maybe this story will turn out just like their mothers did.
Not much it won't. Listen, didn't the cavalry all start this morning?
Yeah, they did.
But
the cavalry started this morning. They're going to Richmond or someplace while we fight all the Johnnies. It's some dodge like that.
Jim.
What?
How do you think the regiment will do?
Oh, they'll fight all right, I guess, after they once get into it.
You think any of the boys will run?
Oh, there may be a few of them run, but there's them kind in every regiment, especially when they first goes on the fire. Of course, it might happen that the whole kit and boodle might start and run if some big fighting came first off. And then again, they might stay and fight like fun. But you can't bet on nothing. They ain't likely to lick the whole rebel army, though, all at once the first time. But I think they'll fight better than some, if worse than others. That's the way I figure.
Yeah. Ever think you might run yourself, Jim?
Well, I thought it might get too hot for Jim Conklin in some of them scrimmages. And if a whole lot of boys started and run, why, I suppose I'd start and run. But if everybody was a-standing and a-fighting, why, I'd stand and fight. By Jiminy, I would. I'll bet on
it.
It's good to hear that, Jim.
Another morning, another dawn. The landscape is streaked with two long, thin, black columns which disappear on the brow of a hill in front and rearward vanish in a wood. They are like two serpents crawling from the cavern of the night.
We ain't marching when you said, Conklin.
We sure ain't.
It's 3 days since you got all swelled up about there being a battle.
I didn't have it right down to the day, maybe, but close. Closer than anybody else. And there'll be a battle, all right.
Where'd the colonel get to, Jim?
What's that, Henry?
Where'd the colonel get to?
Up front, I reckon, sitting on his big fat horse.
What a big fat life.
Jim, did you hear what the colonel said to the general's messenger this morning?
About the cigars, you mean?
Yeah. Don't forget that box of cigars, the colonel said. Thunder, what a time to worry about cigars.
What a big fat war.
At nightfall, the column broke into regimental pieces and the fragments went into the fields to camp. Tents sprang up and fires sputtered and the black forms of men moved to and fro with tall shadows. Private Henry Fleming wandered into the gloom on the edge of the camp. He lay down in the grass. The moon had been lighted and was hung in a treetop. The insects sang solemnly. The liquid stillness of the night enveloping him made him feel vast pity for himself.
You're no soldier, Henry. Not you. You're no soldier.
Henry Fleming felt alone in space.
Fleming? That you, Henry?
Huh? Wilson?
Hello, Henry. I thought it was you. What you doing here?
Oh, thinking.
You're getting blue, kid. Bluer than your suit. Oh, you're looking thundering peaked. What's wrong with you?
Oh, nothing.
We got them now. At last, by the eternal thunders, we'll lick them good.
I thought you was objecting to this march a little while ago.
No, it wasn't that. I don't mind marching if there's going to be fighting at the end of it. But this time, we're in for a big battle, Jim says. We've got the best end of it, certain sure. Gee, Rod, how we'll thump them.
You're going to do great things, I suppose.
Ooh, I don't know. Suppose I'll do as well as the rest. I'm going to try like thunder.
How do you know you won't run when the time comes?
Run? Of course not.
Well, lots of good enough men have thought they was going to do great things before the fight, but when the time come, they skedaddled.
Oh, that's all true, I suppose. But I'm not going to skedaddle. A man that bets on my running will lose his money, that's all. Yep.
You ain't the bravest man in the world, are you?
No, I ain't. I didn't say I was the bravest man in the world, neither. I said I was going to do my share of fighting, that's what I said. And I am, too. Who are you, anyhow? You talk as if you thought you was Napoleon Bonaparte.
Well, you needn't get mad about it.
Henry Fleming went slowly to his tent and stretched himself on a blanket at Jim Conklin's side. In the thick darkness, lying listening to the snoring of his friend, he was sharply aware of his fear.
I'm afraid. No. Yes, I'm afraid.
And as he sweated with the pain of his fearful thoughts, he could hear low, serene sentences in the hollow night.
Clock?
I'll bid five.
I bid six.
Seven.
Seven goes.
Private Henry Fleming stared at the red, shivering reflection of a campfire on the white wall of his tent until, exhausted and ill from the monotony of his suffering, he fell asleep. Another morning. The regiment is routed out with early energy and hustled along a narrow road that leads deep into the forest. Now they're running through the damp fog of the morning. This is sudden and confusing and frightening and thrilling.
Even dumb short rations, that's all.
Say, what's all this about?
What's the stunt that we skedaddling this way, Bert?
I told you, didn't I? Didn't I tell you?
Billy, keep off of your feet. He'll run like a cow.
Now, what are they in such a hurry for?
I'm dropping my knapsack now. Break him aback.
Oh, ribbon it.
You're right, Rock. You're blamed right. Me too.
Henry, hello. Where are you?
Here. Hello.
I'm with you, Jim.
You can now eat and shoot. That's all you want to do.
Listen. Hey, listen. Muskets.
It's muskets, all right.
Private Henry Fleming was bewildered. As he ran with his comrades, he strenuously tried to think. But all he knew was that if he fell down, those coming behind would tread upon him. He was in a moving box. It seemed to him now that he had never wished to come to the war. He had not enlisted of his own free will. He had been dragged by the merciless government. And now they were taking him out to be slaughtered. The regiment slid down a bank and wallowed across a little stream. The mournful current moved slowly on, and from the water, shaded black, some white bubble eyes looked at the men.
Artillery!
Henry Fleming forgot many things as he felt a sudden impulse of curiosity. He scrambled up the bank with a speed that could not be exceeded by a bloodthirsty man. He expected a battle scene. There were some little fields, girded and squeezed by a forest. Spread over the grass and in among the tree trunks, he could see knots and waving lines of skirmishers who were running back and forth and firing at the landscape. A dark battle line lay upon a sun-struck clearing that gleamed orange color. A flag fluttered.
Look at them all coming up the bank. How many regiments we got?
What difference will it make?
Look at, we're forming brigade. We're forming a battle line.
How do we get to do that, do you suppose?
The landscape lay before Henry Fleming like a threat. He felt cold. A house standing placidly in a distant field had to him an ominous look. The shadows of the woods were formidable. The swift thought came to him that the generals did not know what they were about. It was all a trap. They were all going to be sacrificed. The generals were stupid. The enemy would presently swallow the whole command. Henry Fleming glared about him, expecting to see the stealthy approach of his death.
Come on, kid. Get up in the ranks there. No skulking to do here.
Yes, sir.
After a time, the brigade was halted in the cathedral light of the forest, and the men dug in. Then they were moved and dug in again. They ate their noon meal in a third position. They were moved from this one also. They were marched from place to place with apparent aimlessness.
You suppose they'll move us again, Jim?
Don't know, Henry. Want a bit of cracker and pork?
No, thanks. I can't stand this much longer. I don't see what good it does to make us wear out our legs for nothing.
Oh, I suppose we have to go reconnoiter around the country just to keep them getting too close.
I tell you, if anybody with any sense was running this army...
Shut your mouth. They ain't had their coat and them pants on for 6 months, Wilson, and yet you're talking...
Well, I want to do some fighting. I didn't come here to walk. I could have walked to home, round around the barn if I just wanted to walk.
Maybe you should have. I'm going to find me a more comfortable place.
Hey, what's going on now? Hey, skirmishers are running. Look, they are, too. You can see the rifle flashes now.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I don't know at all.
Henry, take these, will you?
What?
It's letters and papers. Take the whole packet. Something tells me.
Oh, what do you mean, Wilson?
I'm a gone squirrel's first time, I know it. And I want you to take these here things to my folks.
Well, say, Wilson, look, I...
Here. Take them.
You've got to hold them back, Colonel. You've got to hold them back.
All right, General. All right, by Harry. We'll do...
Oh, we're in for it now. We're in for it now.
Reserve your fire, boys. Don't shoot like men. Save your fire. Wait till they get close up. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled.
Quick. Quick. Oh, quick. Now.
Right. Now fire. Fire.
We've held them back. We've held them back.
Turned it, we haven't.
I don't know how.
I just don't know how at all.
How are you, Henry? You all right?
I'm all right, sure. Gee, ain't it hot?
You bet.
I never seen such dumb hotness.
And I hope we don't have no more fright until a week from Monday.
Yeah.
Hey, where's Jim?
Who?
Jim Conklin.
Oh, he'll be around. Telling us about the battle he predicted so early.
What's the squad there?
Where?
Back there, moving back to the rear.
That ain't a squad. Don't be a dumb fool. That's wounded.
Yeah? I didn't have time to notice if any of our...
Some did. Some did, all right. Shut up.
All right. All right.
Private Henry Fleming listened to the noises of war, to the deep thunder that came from far to the left, and to the lesser clamors from all directions. He lay back tired and beaten and old. And it occurred to him that they were fighting, too, over there, and over there, and over there. Up until now, he had supposed that all the battle was directly under his nose. As he looked around him, Henry Fleming felt a flash of astonishment at the blue, pure sky and the sun glowing on the trees and fields. It was surprising that nature had gone tranquilly on with her golden process in the midst of so much devilment.
Not again.
Hey, why can't somebody send us supports?
We ain't never going to stand this second, Banyan.
I didn't come here to fight the whole dumb rebel army.
I wish Bill Spencer had tread on my hand instead of me treading on his, and I'd go wounded.
Oh, no, no, no,
all
no.
All right, get yourselves ready, boys. They're coming again. Quick now.
God, no, no.
Now then, now.
Henry Fleming's neck was quivering with nervous weakness, and the muscles of his arms felt numb and bloodless. His hands, too, holding his hot rifle, seemed large and awkward, and there was a great uncertainty about his knee joints. A man near him, who up to this time had been working feverishly at his rifle, suddenly stopped and ran, screaming. There was a revelation. Henry Fleming threw down his rifle and ran. There was no shame in his face. He ran like a rabbit. His unbuttoned coat bulged in the wind. The flap of his cartridge box bobbed wildly, and his canteen swung out behind. He ran like a blind man. Henry Fleming knew that he could not run much further. Deep in the woods, he staggered and stumbled, trying to rid himself of the cracking shots which were to him like voices. The ground was cluttered with vines, and the trees grew close together. He went far, seeking dark and intricate places. After a time, the sound of musketry and cannon grew faint. The rumble of death was far away. The sun, suddenly apparent, blazed among the trees. The insects were making rhythmical noises. A bird flew on light-hearted wing. This landscape gave him assurance. A fair field holding life. It was the religion of peace.
I don't want you to ever do anything, Henry, that you'd be ashamed to let me know about.
No, no, no.
Henry Fleming shambled along with bowed head, his brain a tumult of agony and despair. At length, he reached a place where the high arching boughs of the trees made a kind of room in the forest. Pine needles were a gentle brown carpet in the half-light. Near the threshold, he stopped, stunned, struck cold with horror. He was being looked at by a dead man who was seated with his back against a tree. The corpse was dressed in a uniform that once had been blue, but was now faded to a melancholy shade of green. The eyes were locked in a dull, dry stare. The dead man and the living exchanged a long look. Henry Fleming put one hand behind him and brought it against a tree. Leaning upon this, he retreated step by step with his face still toward the thing. He feared that if he turned his back, the body might spring up and stealthily pursue him. At last, he broke the bonds which had fastened him to the spot and fled, unheeding the underbrush. Finally, Henry Fleming came to a road along which a blood-stained crowd was streaming to the rear. The wounded men were cursing, groaning, and wailing. Only a very few of them were singing. Henry Fleming joined the crowd and marched along with it. The torn bodies expressed the awful machinery in which men had been entangled.
Don't juggle me, Sir Johnson, you fool! Think my leg's made of iron?
No, sir.
Well, carry me decent, then.
Well, it's a pretty good fight, wasn't it? Boy! Boy!
Huh? What?
Pretty good fight. Darn me if I ever see fellas fight so. I know the boys should do it when they once got square at it. Boys ain't had no fair chance up to now, but this time they showed what they was. You can't lick them boys, no, sir. Fighters they be.
Who are you with?
148th Maine. You?
304th New York.
Well, you was there. We was all together there when they came at us the second time. Didn't we show them?
Yeah. Yeah, sure did.
I was talking cross pickets with a boy from Georgia once, and that boy, he says, your fellas all run hildy-hooping once they hear a gun, he says. Maybe they will, I says, but I don't believe none of it, I says. And by Jiminy, I says back to him, maybe your fellas will all run hildy-hooping once they hear a gun, I says. Yeah, he laughed. They didn't run today, did they? Hey, kid?
No. No, reckon not.
No, sir. They fit and fit and fit. Where you hit, kid?
What?
Where you hit?
Hit? I got it.
Henry Fleming there. Henry.
Jim. Jim Conklin.
Hello, Henry.
Oh, Jim. Jim,
where you been, Henry? I thought maybe you got killed over. There's been thunder to pay today. I was worrying about it a good deal.
Jim,
you
let
know
me help
I was
you.
Out there. And what a circus, eh? And by Jiminy, I got shot. Yes, by Jiminy, I got shot.
Is there anything I can...
I tell you what I'm afraid of, Henry. I tell you what I'm afraid of.
What, Jim?
Afraid I'll fall down. And you know, them artillery wagons, they like as not to run over me.
I'll take care of you, Jim. I'll take care of you. I swear I will.
Will you, Henry?
Oh, yeah. I'll take care of you. I'll take care of you,
I was always a good friend of you, wasn't I, Henry? Always been a pretty good fella, ain't I? Ain't much task, is it?
No, Jim,
you
know.
Just to help me along out of the road, I'd do it for you, wouldn't I, Henry?
Sure enough, Jim. Now, here, hang on to me. Give me your arm.
No, leave me be. Leave me be.
But, Jim.
Leave me be.
Jim, where are you going?
You better take him out of the road, kid. There's a battery coming hilly-hoop down the road. He'll get runned over. He's a goner anyhow in about 5 minutes. You can see that.
Leave me be.
You better take him out of the road. Where the blazes does he get his strength from?
I don't know. Jim. Jim, come with me now.
Huh?
Come on. Into the fields.
Into the fields? The fields!
Hey, look it! Look out! He's running! After him!
Jim! Jim, what are you doing? What makes you do this while you hurt yourself?
No! No! Don't catch me! Leave me be! Leave me be!
Where you going, Jim? Where you going? Tell me, won't you, Jim?
Leave me be! Chester! Leave me be! For the magic!
Go by yourself, boy.
Henry Fleming and the tattered soldier stood motionless, watching Jim Conklin. The tall, spare figure was erect. His bloody hands were quietly at his side. He was waiting with patience for something that he had come to meet. He was at the rendezvous. They paused and stood expectant.
Jim. Jim.
Leave me be. Don't touch me.
Let him alone, kid.
Suddenly, Jim Conklin stiffened and straightened. He stared ahead of him. To the two watchers, there was a curious and profound dignity in the firm lines of his awful face. Then the tall figure began to swing forward, slow and straight in the manner of a falling tree. A swift muscular contortion made the left shoulder strike the ground first. The body seemed to bounce a little way from the earth.
No, no.
Henry Fleming and the tattered soldier went forward to the unmoving body. The mouth was open, and the teeth showed in a laugh. As the flap of the blue jacket fell away from the body, they could see that the side looked as if it had been chewed by wolves. Henry Fleming turned with sudden, livid rage toward the battlefield. He shook his fist. The red sun was pasted in the sky like a wafer.
Listening to Studio One at CBS, presenting as its seventh broadcast in the new series of hour-length dramas, The Red Badge of Courage, Stephen Crane's classic novel of the war between the American states, 1861 through 1865. The story will resume after a pause for station identification. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Continuing Columbia's new full-hour feature production, Studio One, we present the concluding portion of The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane.
Private Henry Fleming and his tattered companion stand motionless and alone over the blue-clad body of Jim Conklin in the empty field near the battle.
I've never seen a man die like that before.
Yeah, looky here, kid. He's up and gone, ain't he? We might as well begin to look out for old number one. This here thing is all over. He's up and gone. He's all right here. Nobody won't bother him. I must say I ain't enjoying any great health myself right now.
Oh, no. You ain't got it. Not you, too.
All I want is some pea soup and a good bed. Pea soup.
I wonder how Jim got hit and where he was fighting.
Well, ain't no use now staying here and trying to ask him anything.
Jim?
I'm commencing to feel pretty bad.
Bad?
Oh, I ain't going to die yet. There's too much depending on me for me to die yet. No, sir. Nary die. Can't. Now, to see the squad of children I've got and all like that. What you going to do now?
Try to find my regiment, I guess.
You do that, then. You do that, kid. I'm going to set myself down over there at the edge of the road and rest a bit.
Will you be all right?
Oh, I'll be just fine. You look pretty peaked yourself, you know. I bet you've got a worse wound than you think. Better take care of your hurt.
No, I'll be all right.
Well, you go along, then. You go along.
Well, bye, then.
Take care now.
Henry Fleming fought against a cold feeling of shame and moved on. He became aware that the furnace roar of the battle was growing louder. As he rounded a hillock, he saw that the roadway was now a crying mass of wagons, teams, and men. Fear was sweeping it along. The cracking whips bit and horses plunged and tugged. The white-topped wagons strained and stumbled in their exertions like fat sheep.
They're all retreating. They all are.
The fight was lost. The Union Army, helpless in the matted thickets and blinded by the overhanging night, was going to be swallowed. War, the red animal, the blood-swollen god, war, would have its bloated fill. Henry Fleming stared in agony and amazement.
Why? What's the matter?
Soon he was in the midst of them, in the heedless midst of the walking, the riding, the running, the limping.
Why? Why?
There ain't no reason, kid. The line's broke. No reason, any of it.
Why?
Say, where's the plank road? Where's the plank road?
Well, stop. Wait. Tell me. What's happened?
Echo me.
No, tell me what's been happening.
Echo me. You want a crack in the head?
Where'd the line break? Tell me.
You let go me.
No.
Well, then, here.
Oh. Henry Fleming saw the angry man's rifle swing at him. And then there was only the thunder of pain in his head. He dropped to the ground. Then he tried to rise. In his efforts against the numbing pain, he was like a man wrestling. At last, with a twisting movement, he got up on his hands and knees. And after a while, like a small boy learning to walk, he got to his feet. He lurched over the grass, holding his head in his hands.
Hey there, boy. You seem to be in a pretty bad way, boy.
Ooh.
Here, give me your arm.
Thanks.
I'm going your way. The whole gang's going your way. I guess I can give you a heft.
Thanks.
Come along. Let's get hiking. What regiment do you belong to?
304.
Eh?
304.
I thought they was engaged today. They were in the center.
They was?
They was, eh? Well, pretty nearly everybody got their share fighting today. My dad, I give myself up for dead any number of times. There was shooting here and a shooting there and a hollering here and a hollering there in the darkness too later until I couldn't tell to save my soul which side it was on. Sometimes I thought sure enough I was from Ohio. And other times I could have swore from the bitter end of Florida. It was the most mixed up darn thing I ever seen. Easy there.
I'm all right. Just slipped.
These here whole woods is a regular mess. And it'll be a miracle if we find our regiments. Since you know we'll meet plenty of guards and one thing or another. How'd you get way over here anyhow? Your regiment's a long way from here, ain't it?
I don't know.
Well, I guess we can find it. It's going to be a long hunting, but I guess we can do it. Well, there you are, last boy. You see that fire over there in the hollow?
I see it.
Well, there's your regiment. I want to get moving and find my crowd before midnight. So, bye, boy. Good luck to you.
Oh, thanks. Good luck. Thanks.
Halt! Who goes?
Fleming. Is this the 304th?
Fleming! That you, Henry?
Hello, Wilson. You here?
Henry, by ginger, I'm glad to see you. I give you up for a goner. I thought you was dead, sure enough.
I've been all over, way over on the right. Terrible fighting over there.
Yeah?
I got separated from the regiment over on the right. I got shot in the head. I never see such fighting.
You got shot? Well, why didn't you say so first? Oh, hold on a minute. I'll call a corporal.
What are you talking to, Wilson? You're the darndest sentry. Why, hello, Henry. You here?
Hello, Hunter.
Why, I thought you was dead hours ago. Great Jerusalem. They keep turning up every 10 minutes or so. If they keep on coming this way, we'll get the whole company back by morning yet. Where was you?
Over on the right. I got separated.
Yeah, and he got shot in the head, and he's in a fix, and we got to see to him right away.
Hurts like thunder, I reckon, eh?
Yeah, hurts a good deal.
Come on, Henry. I'll take care of you.
Put him to sleep in my blanket, Hunter, and... hold on a minute. Here's my canteen full of coffee. Look at his head by the fire and see how it looks. When I get to leave in a couple of minutes, I'll be over and see to it. Here we are, Henry. I'll just get the bandage on it. You've been grazed by a ball.
I guess.
Yeah, raised a queer lump, just as if some fella had lammed you on the head with a club.
Yeah?
Stopped bleeding a long time ago.
Did it?
How's the cloth? Cold enough?
Feels good.
Fine. Most about it is, in the morning you'll feel it. Number 10 hat wouldn't fit you. Yeah. There you are. How do you feel?
Oh, it's good to be back with the regiment again.
And how's the bandage?
Good. Good. Thanks, Wilson.
Oh, forget it. I know I'm a blacksmith. taking care of sick folks, and you never squeaked once. All right, come on now. Lie yourself down and get some sleep.
Hold on a minute. Where are you going to sleep?
Right down here by you.
Well, but hold on a minute. What you going to sleep in? I got your blanket.
Shut up. Go on to sleep. Don't be making a fool of yourself. Go on now. You have to take care.
Private Henry Fleming lay back in deep exhaustion. There were voices.
Don't be making a fool of yourself. You'll have to take care.
Take real care of yourself, Henry. Don't go behaving foolish. Don't go doing crazy things.
Shame and remorse for his cowardice that day rose inside him like a fever. But fatigue was the victor, and in a few minutes, Henry Fleming was asleep.
How do you feel this morning?
Oh, pretty bad. My head feels like a melon.
Oh, I hope you feel better this morning.
Oh, I feel better, all right. Thanks for everything you did last night, Wilson.
Why, nothing. Here, I brought you some coffee.
Thanks. There's a battle, huh?
Yeah, way over the hill. Probably send us back soon.
Will they?
What do you think the chances are, Henry? Think we'll wallop them?
Day before yesterday, you'd have bet you'd lick the whole kit and caboodle all by yourself.
Would I? Well, perhaps I would.
No, I guess you wouldn't either.
Oh, you needn't mind what you said, Henry. I believe I was a pretty big fool in those days.
It was only yesterday.
Seems longer.
I was a pretty big fool myself.
For getting hit, you mean?
Yeah.
Paul, the officer said we got the Confederates in a pretty tight box. They all seem to think we've got them just where we want them.
Well, I don't know about that. What I seen over on the right yesterday makes me think it's the other way about.
You think so? I thought we handled them pretty rough yesterday.
Not where I was. Oh, I forgot to say, Jim Conklin's dead.
Is he? Jim Conklin?
Yeah. Shot in the side.
You don't say. Jim. Poor cuss.
Yeah.
Oh, Henry.
Yeah?
I guess you might as well give me back the packet. Them letters and things I give you. Keep for me.
Oh, sure. Here you are.
Thanks.
Henry Fleming's regiment was marched to relieve a command that had lain long in damp trenches. The men took positions behind a curving line of rifle pits that had been turned up like a large furrow along the line of woods. Before them was a level stretch peopled with short, deformed stumps. From the woods beyond came the dull popping of the skirmishers and pickets firing in the fog. The men's faces grew doleful. Tales of hesitation and uncertainty on the part of those high in place and military responsibility came to their ears. Stories of disasters arrived with many proofs. The men were disheartened.
Oh, what more can we do?
Jiminy, we're being generaled by a lot of lunkheads.
More than one feller said that today.
Well, I reckon we got licked yesterday.
But don't we fight like the devil? Don't we do all that men can?
No man dare say we don't fight like the devil.
And so I don't see any sense in fighting and fighting and fighting and always losing through some lunkhead of a
general. Maybe you think you fit the whole battle yesterday yourself.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't fight the whole battle yesterday.
Oh.
All right, you boys, shut up. There's no need of wasting your breath in long-winded arguments about this and that and the other. You've been joined like a lot of old hens. All you got to do is fight, and you'll get plenty of that to do in about 10 minutes. Less talking and more fighting is what's best for you boys. I never saw such gabbling jackasses.
Yes, sir.
Too much chin music and too little fighting in this war anyhow.
The day had grown more white until the sun shed a full radiance upon the thronged forest. A minor gust of battle came sweeping toward that part of the line where lay Henry Fleming's regiment. In this part of the field, there passed slowly the intense moments that precede the tempest. The men were worn, exhausted, having slept little and labored much. They rolled their eyes toward the advancing battle as they stood awaiting the shock. Some shrank and flinched. They stood as men tied to stakes.
Ready? Now?
We can fire. Fire!
Henry Fleming took up a first position behind a small tree with a direct determination to hold it against the world. He did not think it possible that his army could that day succeed. And from this pessimistic outlook, somehow he felt the ability to fight harder. The flames bit him and the hot smoke broiled his skin. His rifle barrel grew so hot that ordinarily he could not have held it in his hands. But now he kept on stuffing cartridges into it and pounding them with his clanking, bending ramrod. Moaned and was firing when all those near him had ceased. He was so occupied that he was not aware of the lull.
Hey, you infernal fool, Fleming! Don't you know enough to click when there ain't anything to shoot at?
The enemy had fallen back.
By heavens, if I had 10,000 wildcats like Fleming, I could tear the stomach out of this war in less than a week.
Fleming did a lot of firing, all right.
Are you all right, Henry? You feel all right?
I feel fine.
There ain't nothing the matter with you, Henry, is there? Shooting away like that?
No. Just making up a little time.
Hard work. Hard work.
By thunder, I bet this army will never see another regiment like us.
You bet.
A dog, a woman, and a walnut tree. The more you beat them, the better they be. That's like us.
Lost a pile of men, they did. If an old woman swept up the woods, she'd get a dustpan full.
Yeah. Then she'll come around again in about an hour. She'll get a pile more.
The forest still bore its burden of clamor. From off under the trees came the rolling clatter of musketry. Each distant thicket seemed a strange porcupine with quills of flame. A cloud of dark smoke as from smoldering ruins went up toward the sun, now bright and gay in the blue enameled sky. Henry Fleming and Wilson were by stream to fill their canteens. The sudden appearance of a jangling general on horseback pulling up to address a staff officer brought them to a halt. They kept out of sight, but they could hear the officer's conversation.
General Fisher! Hey, yes, General?
Can they see us? I don't reckon so. Too many trees.
The Confederates are forming over there for another charge, Fisher. It'll be directed against Whiteside, and I fear they'll break through there unless we work like thunder to stop them.
It'll be a task to stop them, sir.
Yes, I presume so. What troops can you spare?
Well, sir, I had to order in the 12th to help the 76th, and I haven't really got any. But there's a 304th.
Hey, that's us.
They fight like a lot of mule drivers, sir. I can spare them best of any.
He calls us mule drivers? Us?
Well, get them ready, then. I'll watch developments from here and send you word when to start them. It'll happen in about 5 minutes.
Right, sir. I'll prepare.
I don't believe many of your mule drivers will ever get back, but we'll do what we can, eh?
Fleming, Wilson, how long does it take you to get water anyhow? Where you been to?
We're going to charge. We're going to charge.
Charge? Well, now, this is real fight.
Yeah. Are we sure enough?
Well, I'll be darned.
I'll bet you're lying.
Sure, certain, I tell you.
Not by a blame said he ain't lying. We heard him talk.
Who? The general himself and a staff over at the edge of the woods.
Great Jerusalem. We'll get swallowed.
Henry Fleming stared at the man in front of him. Its foliage now seemed to veil powers and horrors. He was unaware of the machinery of orders that started the charge, although from the corners of his eyes he saw an officer come galloping, waving his hat. Suddenly he felt a straining and heaving among the men. The line fell slowly forward like a toppling wall. And with a convulsive, instinctive gasp that was intended for a brave cheer, the regiment began its journey. The youth was pushed and jostled for a moment before he understood the movement at all. But directly he lunged ahead and began to run.
Come on, you fools! Come on! You can't stay lagging! You must come on! You only gotta go across that line!
Across there! All the way!
Certainly, all the way! Come on!
Sudden rift in the smoke cloud saw a gray mass of troops interwoven and magnified until they appeared to be thousands. A fierce-hued flag flashed before his sight. He centered the eyes of his soul on that enemy flag. Its possession would be high pride. He would seize it. He himself.
It's mine. It's mine. I'll get it.
He plunged across the field like a mad horse, headed right for the Confederate flag. He pulled at it, and suddenly wrenching it free of the rebel soldier, swung up its red brilliancy with a mad cry of exultation, even as its bearer, gasping, lurched over and turned his dead face to the ground.
I got it! I got it, boys! Look, look!
There was much blood upon the grass. Presently, they knew that no fighting threatened them. All ways seemed once more open to them. The dusty blue lines of their friends were seen a short distance away disarming prisoners. In the distance, there were many noises. But in all this part of the field, there was a sudden stillness.
Fleming! Wilson! You ought to heard.
Heard what?
Watch Barton, Stanley.
You just ought to heard.
Well, what?
Yeah,
Wilson! The colonel met our lieutenant right by us. Right by us, me and Brock. And it was the concernedest thing I ever heard. He says, him, he says.
Get on with it.
Mr. Hesbrook, he says, by the way, who was that lad what got their flag, he says.
Yeah?
There, Fleming, what do you think of that?
I don't believe it, that's why.
Who was the lad that got their flag, he says. And the lieutenant, he speaks up right away. That's Fleming, and he's our Jim Hickey. He says right away.
Oh, go away, Stanley.
I say he did. Brock was there. Jim Hickey says those are his words.
That's right, sure enough.
No, he did.
He did, too. I say he did. The lieutenant says that, and the colonel, he says, him, he is indeed a very good man to have. I saw him, says the colonel. You bet, says the lieutenant. He and a fellow named Wilson was at the head of the charge and howling like Indians all the time, he says. A fellow named Wilson, he says. There, Wilson, my boy, put that in a letter and send it home to your ma, eh? And the colonel, he says, were they indeed, he says. At the head of the regiment, he says. They were, says the lieutenant. My sake, says the colonel. He's a mild man. And then he says, well, 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 he says. Them two babies? They were, says the lieutenant. Well, well, says the colonel. They deserve to be major generals, he says. They deserve to be major generals.
Some story.
You're lying, Stanley.
Well, ask Brock.
They never said all that.
They did, and that's Ma's truth. And shut up and go to blazes.
Well, what now, I wonder?
The lieutenant says we're going to get along out of this and back over the river.
Well, I swear.
And within a little while, the regiment received orders to retrace its way. The men got up grunting from the red, wet grass and swore and groaned. They had almost as many objections to this change as they would have had to a proposal for a new battle.
Well, it's over, Henry.
By Harry, I think it is.
The regiment marched until it had joined its fellows. The reformed brigade, in column, curved away from the field and went winding off in the direction of the river.
A dog, a woman, and a walnut tree. The more you beat them, the better they be.
For a time, Henry Fleming, marching, was obliged to reflect in a puzzled and uncertain way. He had been where there was red of blood and black of passion, and he had escaped. His first thoughts were given to rejoicing at this fact.
The battle's over. It's all over now.
He recalled with a thrill of joy the respectful comments of his fellows on his conduct when Stanley's news had proven true. But the ghost of his flight from the first engagement appeared to him in dance. A specter of reproach came to him.
How do you feel about it, Henry?
Huh? Oh, Wilson. I don't know.
If a man should come up and ask me, I'd say we're going down here a ways. Swing around and come in behind him.
Quit it out with your coming in behind him. I've seen all that I wanted. Don't tell me about coming in behind him.
Why shouldn't we come in behind him again? Didn't Jim Conklin tell us we'd come around in behind him this time, didn't he?
Shut your mouth. Shut it up hard.
The shame of his previous cowardice was gone. Henry Fleming felt a quiet man. Non-assertive, but of sturdy and strong blood. He knew that he would no more flinch before his guides wherever they should point. He had been to touch the great death and found that after all, it was but the great death. He had been a boy Now he was a man. It rained. The procession of weary Union soldiers became a bedraggled train, despondent and muttering, marching with churning effort in liquid brown mud under a low, wretched sky. Yet Henry Fleming smiled, for he saw that the world was a world for him. He had rid himself of the red sickness of battle. The sultry nightmare was in the past. He had been an animal blistered and sweating in the heat and pain of war. He turned now with a lover's thirst to images of tranquil skies, fresh meadows, cool brooks, an existence of continuing peace.
I hope it's over soon and he'll come home soon. Take real care now.
Over the river, a warm yellow splash of sun came through the hosts of leaden rain clouds.
The Columbia Broadcasting System has brought you Studio One, a new series of hour-length versions for listening of celebrated stories, novels, and plays. Tonight from Studio One, you have heard Fletcher Markle's production of The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. The adaptation was prepared by Mr. Markle, and the original music was composed and conducted by Alexander Semler.
Now, may a producer identify the principals in our cast tonight. As author Stephen Crane, the story's narrator,
Everett Sloan.
And in the story itself,
Henry Fleming
was played by John Sylvester.
Jim Conklin
was Joe DeSantis.
Wilson
was Robert Dryden.
Ma Fleming
was Hester Sondergaard.
Jesse
was Ann Burr. Next Studio One at CBS. Our story is a cheerfully wicked little affair concerning murder, Mickey Finns, and a missing El Greco. The goings-on occur in the gay heart of Paris, and you will remember their author as having written a most successful bestseller about the last time he saw that fabulous city. The story is the mysterious Mickey Finn and the author, Elliot Paul. Please be with us. Now may I put Studio One's plans aside for a moment to call your attention to a serious problem. If you care about your children's future, you cannot afford to neglect their present. And most especially, you cannot afford to ignore their education. Today, our schools are suffering from overcrowding, understaffing, and lack of equipment. The morale of our teachers is being dangerously undermined by the poor conditions under which they must practice their profession. You can actively assist in the correction of these faults by taking part in parent-teacher organizations and local educational groups in your own community. Your children will soon be graduating from the current school year. Start now to prepare for their return to a better school in September. Make that school worthy of your children and their future. And now, until next week, until Elliot Paul's Parisian mystery thriller, The Mysterious Mickey Finn, this is Fletcher Markle with a good night, and thank you from all of us in Studio One.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.